And good afternoon. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can read us, or pardon me, you can check us out, taylor-report.com. And you can always write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. Today's topic and the man on the scene is going to be Michael Hudson, author of Super Imperialism, The Origin and Fundamentals of U.S. World Dominance. Couldn't pick a better time, I think, to talk to Mr. Hudson. He is also an economic advisor to Dennis Kucinich, who is is the United States Congressman from Ohio and is was a presidential candidate and is one of those who voted today against the, if you haven't heard the news, the United States Congress, the House of Representatives, voted on whether to provide $700 million emergency bailout for the finance industry, and they decided not to. And I understand the Toronto Stock Exchange is a little bit dizzy and is dropping. Well, at this moment, I think we are joined by Professor Michael Hudson. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Well, Michael, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. And I'll bet you're in big demand today.
I'm waiting for there's a TV crew outside the door now.
Oh, I thought, you see, we were good.
They were supposed to be here earlier, but they got here late. So
well, that's their tough
problem. Having them wait. That's their problem.
You have been an advisor to Dennis Kucinich.
Yes, and I still am.
And he, you must be proud of him today. I understand he voted against it. And as a matter of fact, our news is that they have voted it down.
Yes, they have. Dennis gave a wonderful speech in Congress. You can read, there's a report on it on Counterpunch already. And he pointed out that this bill was purely a giveaway to Wall Street. It did not help homeowners. In fact, it supported creditors against the debtors. And in order for the so-called taxpayers to gain, the government would have to act as a mortgage collector and evict about 5 million homeowners in arrears. And Dennis didn't think that in order to help Wall Street and derivative traders, 5 million homeowners should be evicted.
Mm-hmm. They, of course, in going into this, the President Bush and the leaders in Congress, one hates to say, the Democrats and the Republicans, got together and put the pistol to the head of Congress and then beyond them the American people, said, you don't do this, it's disaster. Dennis has had to deal with that. What is he saying to this, and what do you say to that threat?
Well, basically, when they claimed that it was a bipartisan bill, they meant that both the Republicans and the Democrats have Wall Street as its largest campaign contributor. And they all worried that anyone who voted against the bill would have Wall Street give enormous amounts of money to the opponents in the race. So the Democrats and the Republicans against the bill got together and say, we'll both vote against it. Let them deal with that one.
Mm-hmm.
Overwhelmingly, the response was negative mm-hmm. on of the American people. 95% of the people see very clearly that fool me once with the weapons of mass destruction, shame on you. Fool me twice with the weapons of mass financial destruction, shame mm-hmm. on me.
Yeah. You know, as a coincidence would have it, I happen to be reading Herman Melville's The Confidence Man. And he argues in the book, or demonstrates, that American culture has been rather imbued with cons in the economy for quite a while. That's somewhat your thesis as well, right? That there are a lot of people who are basically crooked who have created this.
Once every decade in this century, there's been a big fraud. This time it was subprime mortgages that every banker knew was bad and just tried to pawn off. Last decade, it was Enron. Before that, it was the S&L crisis and the junk bond crisis. Before that, the Continental Illinois bailout. So every decade, there's a big con. And if you look at the big engineering projects of the 19th century, the railroad, in America, the great railroad giveaways, were insider deals that made the equivalent of billionaires today. The Panama Canal company was done as a con again and again. The Suez Canal went bankrupt again and again through fraud. Finance is essentially fraud because it's hit and miss, at least Anglo-American finance.
Yeah, I understand. Matter of fact, you're working on a book with the, almost that in the title. It's called The Fictional. What is
yes,
it? Your working title is The Fictional Economy.
Yes, that's because most of the accounting today is based on fiction. For instance, in the bill that was the Worthless Assets Recovery Bill, WARP, they call it TARP, the Troubled Assets, but they're really worthless. Mm-hmm. One of the conditions in it is that the Secretary of the Treasury can suspend the requirement that companies give the actual honest market valuation. The Treasury Secretary said if the financial firms were honest, Wall Street would go bankrupt overnight. And that's why this bill was basically insisted and prevented under law any company from reporting honestly what it was worth.
Yeah.
Now, once that means that when the bill was voted down, companies now, as of tomorrow, will have to say what they're worth, and of course the stock market crashed because mm-hmm. the fraud will be exposed.
And incidentally, you and your in your recent writings that I've seen, you've argued that the people should be paying that. If there's any bailout or talk of that type, you have to pay the real value, not the artificial value that's been placed on these mortgages. Am I right?
That's right, but in many cases, the real value is zero.
Us a lot of money.
That's right. And the bankers know what their intention was. Their intent was to try, who can we pawn them off to? And they thought they'd pawn them off to foreigners and the sovereign wealth funds. And they didn't have time, so now the idea is when you buy something to resell, you're always looking for the proverbial greater fool. Well, in this case, the government was the greater fool of last resort.
Well, Canadians consider themselves semi-foreigners. How are the foreigners going to be impacted?
The role of the Canadians is always to be screwed by America. That's their economic function.
That's a familiar
thing. And they very loyally performed it.
Wow.
Wall Street looks at it still as the 14th colony.
Yeah.
Well, that has not yet gained statehood.
Well, thank you for the heads up on that. By the way, you'll be interested to know in the stock, the Toronto Stock Index just went through the floor this afternoon, we're told. So.
That's right. I'll tell you why. Last week, when Lehman Brothers went bankrupt, a few hours before it went bankrupt, it took out $12 billion from its London office, leaving the London office bare. The American companies are now stripping bare their foreign holdings in order to leave more for the bankruptcy for their preferred customers. So the American firms are looting their Canadian affiliates.
Yikes. Now that this legislation is gone on the rocks, at least temporarily, are we going to have another couple of days of people saying the sky's falling and try to force them back and say you're going to?
That's it. They're trying to pretend that the economy will fall apart. And you know, when there are derivatives trades or a hedge fund, if you're going to invest in a hedge fund in America, you have to sign a legal waiver saying that you are at least a millionaire and that you have enough money so that if you lose all your money in the hedge fund, it won't leave you destitute. The same rule is there for Broadway musicals and for Broadway plays, mm-hmm. For other patrons of the arts. So the fact is these hedge funds and derivative trades could all go under, and that wouldn't affect the economy at all. The real economy, that is.
So, in other words, the gamblers would just simply lost what they gambled.
That's right. But gamblers are us, they say. And the pretense is that we're in a casino economy, and the house has to win. And if the house doesn't win, somehow the universe isn't working correctly.
By the way, the language has really sharply changed in public discourse in America. We're hearing about all these places we really rarely talk about, like Wall Street, which used to be verboten. We don't say Wall Street. And then all of a sudden there's Main Street, which across America, Main Street's been disappearing into malls. I was thinking that this deal seemed to have been made in a back street.
You could indeed say that. It's very secretive. I've been trying to download the actual law for the last few hours, and it's 305 pages. But it's all gimmick typographically, so that one has to go through an enormous multi-hour process to get it into normal language. They've done everything they can to conceal it, to not put it up in a text version. They're trying to prevent anyone from actually going through the law so that they can critique it. But when you read the law, it's even worse than they say.
Well, now, what is this? If I understand Dennis Kucinich's position, I assume it's yours, is it? The people who were the authors of this particular financial mess were expecting to kind of come and put the hit on us and then say, give me greater power and more money, and I'll go and fix this.
Give me authority, and I will give more money to my campaign contributor. Fixing. In America you say to fix a race, it has a criminal intent. And so when you say fix, that is the terms in which you should interpret this.
My goodness. Dennis Kucinich raised the point that Paulson, he was going to be the lifeguard, and he's from Goldman Sachs. He said that's just a non-starter. You can't have a guy with the power that he wanted. But he has already, frankly, business commitments to Goldman Sachs.
Well, that's right. The Treasury is supposed to represent the national interest, and the Federal Reserve is supposed to be the antithesis of the national interest, the Board of Directors of the commercial banking system. But in this case, Wall Street supplies both the Federal Reserve head and the Secretary of the Treasury head. And the problem is not merely corruption and his friends. And if you want to see what the last Goldman Sachs Treasury Secretary did, just look and see what Robert Rubin did to Russia. That's what they want. That's exactly what Goldman Sachs wants to do to America. And the Russian population lost more as a result of Rubin's neoliberalism and the kleptocracy there than it lost in all of World War II. It's a mode of thinking, and it's not so much that he'll give his money to his pals on Wall Street. It's that his mode of thinking is to hell with anybody but finance. The casino has to win. We're in the game to make money off the population.
Yeah, and incidentally, that image that you that grows from what you just said, and thank you for introducing the word kleptocracy, because here we've only been permitted to apply that to so-called third world countries. But it turns out we have our own kleptocracy. Am I right?
That's right. And if you're talking about $700 billion, that's the equivalent of creating 700 new billionaires, people who've gambled on the derivative trade in Wall Street. And these would be the families that would dominate North America for the next century. And Congress thought it wasn't, if you're going to have a group of 700 families dominate North America, it would be nicer to have them industrialists or somebody having to do with producing and distributing something than just financial extractive predators.
Mm-hmm. And the check on this, if there is one, and I guess we just witnessed a little evidence of it, is your Constitution, we the people, and Congress, et cetera, are we going to see, or would you anticipate perhaps a dramatic reconfiguration of your politics based on that fight with those who want to give 700 families
ton
of dough?
As Dennis Kucinich mentioned today, this is the most important law in the last 50 years. The Secretary of the Treasury invoked martial law to prevent any discussion of the law beyond a three-hour debate for a few minutes each, that no congressional committee was allowed to hold hearings on it or invite witnesses on it. It was done in secret. This is against every rule that was set up by the Constitution. It was an attempted martial takeover of the American economy and society, and it didn't work, largely because the Republicans protected the country. The Democrats were all for it, expecting, I guess, Obama to come in and that they could somehow wield it. Ironically, the right-wing Republicans who said this is socialism. Yeah. And, of course, it's not socialism, it's fascism. Yeah. And you'd think that that would be their constituency, but they voted ideologically against centralizing autocratic power.
Yeah, it's actually, we had a new Democrat years ago who said he almost got elected to prime minister by saying welfare for Bay Street, that they were the ones who were on the take, and it got him a lot of votes. I don't know why they stopped talking. I bet they're going to be talking about it today. But you have a situation where, if I understood, I mean, Kucinich in his interviews has said some rather shocking things. He said that Obama called to say he didn't want, from his point of view, he didn't want the Democratic caucus, which was considering this bill, to talk about giving bankruptcy judges the discretion to re-examine mortgages.
That's right. Obama
to protect
came down
homeowners.
On the side of creditors against the debtors. And I watched the debate on Friday night with Dennis's other political manager, David Kelly. And I don't know if you saw it, but for the first half hour, Jim Lehrer tried to get both candidates, presidential candidates, McCain and Obama, to say, what do you think of the bailout? Neither was willing to say what they thought of the bailout. They were both dodging the issue, and
absolutely,
we knew that the game was lost, seemingly, for both of them right there. And Barney Frank, who is the Democrat shepherding the law through Congress, it said, well, you know, people have made up their minds as to who to vote already. Obama's not really going to lose any votes by supporting Wall Street against the economy. But what he didn't see was that while people have made up their votes between Obama and McCain, there's a third possibility, and that's simply staying home. What's the point of voting if Obama is now to the right of McCain? And that's what he is. He is on the right. He's to the right wing of McCain, very pro-creditor, pro-Wall Street. The only defense is that one of the people, I was at a monetary meeting of the American Monetary Institute in Chicago, and one of the people there said, well, if either candidate would have come down opposing the bill, Wall Street would have put probably $200 million in the pockets of his opponent just to oppose it. This is going to be the greatest theft in world history. And Wall Street is going to put all the money it can behind a deception campaign to elect its candidate to try to grab the last bit of money. The game is over, and they want to grab all the money they can. And just as the Russian kleptocrats under Robert Rubin and Yeltsin moved their money into the United States out of Russia as soon as they stole it, the American kleptocrats, as soon as the Wall Street people can get their money and dump their bad mortgages, they're going to move it to safety in Moscow and Peking.
My guy, I think
the dollar will plunge, and that will pull down the Canadian dollar too. So Canada has a stake in this.
Yeah, incidentally, we're having an election coming up. It'll be just shortly before yours. You know, by the way, isn't it one of the striking things here? And thank goodness we're talking to you, and we have a man like Dennis Kucinich to kind of keeps the flame going here. But basically, you have the political parties are kind of locked in. It's like there's not a lot of options. And you have your debates, only two guys talk to each other, and they seem to be both Wall Street guys. I'm thinking back to when you did have the Democratic Party debates, Kucinich was raising all kinds of problems for the other candidates. And
that's why the questioners never wanted to ask him serious questions.
Yeah.
Now, the irony...
Yeah, did he believe in flying saucers, I think is what they
Well, wanted. Yes, which is... And that was... I told him that was going to be asked in advance because it was already a little bit on the Internet. And we knew that was coming. And I wanted him to say, why are you asking me these dumb questions about things that I didn't see and don't know what they were, instead of asking me about the economy and something that really matters? Why are you trivializing this?
Yes.
I think he should have thrown it the mud right back in the bastard's face who asked him.
Well, but he did also do very well in those debates. And on the other side of the ledger, I read an interview with the disgruntled Giuliani after he quit the Republican race, and he said, it was no good. And he says Ron Paul was winning all the debates.
That's right. Now, the irony is that here Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich both are accused of being extremists, and what they are classical economists. They're what used to be the norm. They're what used to be the conservative doctrine. And the direction in which Western civilization's legislation has been going for the last 18 years, since the 13th century, has been pro-debtor. You don't want to polarize the population. Because then you'll have us go down just like the Roman Empire went down. And yet Dennis, who's a conservative, classical economist, is viewed as the outrageous one, and the crazies, this neoliberal kleptocrats, are looked on as the norm. It's an upside-down world.
We're talking to Michael Hudson. The title of his book is Super Imperialism. I hope everybody ought to have a copy on their shelf. And by the way, I can tell you, everybody's going to be waiting for your next book for sure.
By the way, Super Imperialism sold more in Canada than it did in the United States.
Well, that's because we're permitted to use the word, you know. They said, well, that's okay, go ahead. Part of what your thesis is that finance capitalism has taken over from industrial capitalism. Am I right? We're not producing goods and services. Now it's into basically tricks with money.
It's into assets and debts, not goods and services. It's claims on wealth, not the kind of wealth that Adam Smith was talking about in The Wealth of Nations.
Mm-hmm. By following people like Phil Graham, and you mentioned, and of course you point out Bill Clinton, they basically wanted to turn the lights out so that we have no transparency and there's no oversight when they do whatever it is they do. Is that the right picture? They wanted to deregulate and did deregulate.
They want deregulation in the dark, so nobody can see what they're doing.
In other words, it's just
free reign for the criminals and the ripoff artists.
Yeah. Now, a question that certainly Canadians have and around the world, I think people scratch their heads. Here you have this kind of financial mess at the heart of the American system. At the same time, they have a war going, an occupation going on in Iraq, and they have one going in Afghanistan, with Mr. Obama saying they should do more of that. How do they afford to do that?
The foreigners are paying entirely for it. What happens is this. When the military spends money abroad and when American consumers spend money abroad, the recipients of these dollars, the local people, turn in the dollars for local currency. These dollars are turned in by their banks to the central bank. The central bank gets these dollars or checks, and what is it going to do with it? Either it cashes them in for something else, but if it doesn't buy dollars, its currency will go up and hurt its exporters. So the central banks almost always take these dollars, and they say we've got to recycle them to the United States. How do they recycle them? They buy treasury bills. So now the foreigner, if America runs a military deficit and a trade deficit and an investment deficit large enough, then it will be able to just automatically fund the budget deficit by foreign central banks. And right now, China holds $1.3 trillion worth of treasury bills. The U.S. Treasury owes $3.5 trillion to foreign central banks, and these are the dollars thrown off by the Iraq War, foreign military spending, and the American takeover of foreign resources, including Canadian resources. When Americans buy out a Canadian company, the Canadian company turns in the U.S. dollars, gets domestic currency, and the Bank of Canada buys treasury bonds. Mm-hmm. So, in essence, foreigners are funding America's war. That's the dollar standard, and that's what I've written about in Super Imperialism.
Mm-hmm. So does this crisis have any, will it, if I understand it, it's almost a separate matter. In other words, would that have any, can we anticipate any impact from this on their ability to continue to pay?
Only the point that foreign governments were told, you've bought already over half the American public debt that we've created. Buy something else. Buy Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac mortgage securities. Mm-hmm. So they were willing to do that as long as they got a higher rate of interest. But now these are going bankrupt. Now there's nothing for foreigners to buy with the dollars that American takeovers and American military spending throws off. So this foreigners are now talking about creating really an alternative to the dollar. And if they move out of the American dollar, that means they'll move out of the Canadian dollar too, because the Canadian government has been asked to commit, would it very politely commit suicide to help America, and of course its politicians say yes.
Yeah. they used to say bite the bullet, and the guy said I swallowed the grenade.
Right.
You're advising Mr. Kucinich, what do you tell him to offer as a plan? Because, frankly, with a crisis of this type, he might end up with a power group that could be thinking about challenging.
Well, for one thing, it's very simple. You renegotiate the home mortgages that are in default. Number one, you prevent the interest rates from jumping up on these adjustable rate mortgages with teaser rates. Secondly, you write down the mortgage to the current market price, and over time, you shift the tax system back on the property off income. In other words, there's been a huge tax shift off wealth onto labor. We want to reverse this and put the taxes back where they were a decade ago. We want to have a graduated income tax, as there was before. We want Social Security to be funded out of the normal budget, not as a user fee that only the lower income people pay. So we want to restructure the tax system as well.
Mm-hmm.
I have another TV crew waiting, so a few minutes.
Well, we took as much of your time as we dared. We leveraged you just a bit. Yes. We got you on, and then we said, well, let's leverage him, and we'll get more time. Michael Hudson, it's been terrific talking to you. We're sure glad you're around, and we're glad Dennis Kucinich is. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and if you could send me a CD of this, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. You'll get it.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.